before, then, there. When Jericho Keen was younger, he watched his girlfriend die and come back to life. It happened the night of the big graduation party. They were in the field behind Tab Bukowski's place. Tab's folks were out of town. The entire class of 1988 was there. Had the run of the place. Real rager. Three kegs of beer, harder liquor too. Jack Daniels, Jaeger. There was also sweeter stuff for the girls, like Southern Comfort and Boone's Farm wine coolers. A few dropouts, hard luck cases like Brian Corbett and Mike Maloney had weed, which in central Connecticut might as well have been meth. It would be a couple of years before Jericho dropped out of college and headed west, and several more until he entered the police academy. Jericho wasn't much of a drinker. Alcoholism ran in the family. Tonight proved an exception, the end of an era. Like many of his friends, he would be sticking closer to home, commuting to Central Connecticut University. The state school's acceptance wasn't anyone's first choice, but it was the only offer on the table. For the brilliant and ambitious, you had Trinity or Yale. The weirdos got Wesleyan. The burnouts and dirtbags landed at Sherwood Industries or Sherry Cup, or if they could fix cars, they did that. Girls married one of the guys or found an office job where they could type or make coffee. Times were different back then. CCSU was an average destination for an ordinary Joe with nowhere else to go. Jericho lived down the road off Pine Brook, through the thick alcoves and trickling creeks, past Elton Road, down Gray Mill, in the home his father built beneath the towering peaks of Mount Lamentation. The town was small, and his house was less than a mile away. Dad lived much further, in the sticks of Mudus, with his new wife, who had a head full of rocks. The rest of the family, his mother, grandmother, and younger brother Jacob, was at Disney World, meeting up with cousins and an aunt. The vacation was billed as a graduation gift. At almost 18, Jericho was too old for frosted castles and giant mice, but too young, at least in his uber-religious mother's eyes, to be left alone with a girlfriend in an empty house. He had to fight like hell to stay behind. By midnight, Jericho was dating Beth, a sophomore, whose parents wanted her home by midnight. Looking back, after the accident, after he had known what it meant to her father, he could admit they weren't as strict as much as they were good parents. When Beth whispered she was ready to leave, Jericho grabbed her hand and raced for his mom's Bronco. Beth was hammered, too. Nobody at the party was sober. This was before ride-sharing and cell phones were still a decade away. Taxis didn't venture this deep in the cut. Jericho knew drunk driving was wrong. You'd see ads on TV all the time. MADD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. But these warnings were more of a gesture. No one tried to stop him or take away his keys. A soft summer rain fell, drumming off the four-wheel's hood. Bon Jovi's Never Say Goodbye played in the tape deck. Their song. Beth had her face buried in his neck, her hand searching his lap, stirring those parts that only stir when you're 17, when your heart is still fresh, untainted, before life has had its way with you. In the valley of Elton Road, he took a corner too fast, skidding on the slick, oily rainwater drawn to the surface after a good, hard rain. The Bronco spun 360. He and Beth were flung around the cab, shoulders banging glass, head smacking vinyl siding, and the Jesus bar. The Bronco jumped the culvert and his front end smashed into a tree. The hood kinked like an accordion and the engine billowed black smoke. Jericho had hit his forehead on the steering wheel. He likely had a concussion, but he never got it checked out. Head injuries and long-term ramifications weren't as scrutinized back then. Coming out of the fog, he checked the rear view, watching blood trickle from the split in his widow's peak. No one sat beside him. There was a big hole in the passenger side window. Glass shards were scattered across the seat and floor, glimmering like diamonds in the headlights reflecting off the trees. The wind and rain picked up, slanting fierce. Pinned against the door, he was barely able to squeeze out. Hitting the ground, he realized he had dislocated his shoulder. His left arm dangled by his side. Any movement hurt like hell. Staggering through the mud, he used his right hand to hold his left arm in place. Her body lay 20 feet away. So much blood. He screamed for help. In the dark shadows of the tall mountain, his voice was swallowed by the deep valley and thick vegetation. Dropping to his knees, he felt for a pulse. Nothing. He tried CPR like he'd been taught in health class. Pointless. Her neck was bent 90 degrees, and her eyes, which remained open, glazed over. Her pale, fish-belly flesh was still warm but cooling fast. She was dead. He cradled her limp body in his arms. Jericho Keane's life was over. That was all he could think about, how this would affect him. He'd be charged with murder and sent to prison. He heard stories about what happened to boys like him in prison. He was much smaller back then. Holding her dead body, he sobbed, wailing into the storm, begging for mercy from a God he had stopped believing in, but now desperately needed. How could it end like this? That's the last thing he remembered, being on his knees, crying in the red earth and pouring.